Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Oh my God, Sarah, I'm so exhausted.
I saw you had a pretty big weekend. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what happens to me, I know you're not thinking about all of your fans.
I'm one of your fans.
Oh my God. Like, no, you're
like
a
competing,
friend.
And I'm like glued to your Instagram feed to see like what's happening next. And aww. Then it like kills me when you don't post a video of one of your events. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're done already. Like, I wanted to see everything.
I did post everything.
Did you post everything? No, you missed one. You posted 4 out of the 5 events.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we posted on the blog today of like what the series of misfortunate events was on event number 3.
I haven't had a chance to read. So what was it, an event that you didn't rock? Is that why you didn't post it?
All of the women did not do the thing because the event planner overestimated the lifting power of the women. In fact, there were heavyweight men who did not lift the car. The car was like a really old, really heavy Mustang. And so even though I lifted a car with no problems, like in training, on the day of the event, my coach was like, all right, I don't want you to waste your energy. I'm going to go lift the car and I'll tell you how heavy it is. Cause he was like, oh, they took the back seat out. It's going to be awesome. You're going to rock this. No problem. And he's got this attitude about it. And then he comes back and he's like, it'll be fine. You'll lift it. And I could just tell from the way his attitude had changed that like it was really heavy. And so when the way that the events ran that day is people were concurrently doing different things. So like while I did yoke and then while I did log, two other groups of people had done the car lift, and several of those people had all men had not been able to lift the car. And so my goal was like to lift the car one time because I just wanted to lift the car.
Yep.
And originally, before I knew it was really heavy, I had wanted to lift it 3 times because I had lifted a car before one time. And I was like, oh, in 45 seconds, I should totally be able to lift it 3 times. But this car was like twice the weight of the other car, or maybe like a combination of, you know, the functionality and the stiffness of the actual car lift itself being different than the car lift that I was used to or whatever. But none of the women were able to lift it. I inched it off the ground. I did post the full YouTube video of me making awful faces with veins popping out of my neck for 45 seconds on the blog in like a YouTube compilation video. But there was nothing to post. Like, I was kind of like, well, how do I post a video of me not lifting something? So because all of us zeroed, like, I technically won all the events, but there were only 4 events instead of 5 because nobody got the 3rd event. So, yeah, it was really disappointing in some aspects. The contest was more disorganized than I'm used to, but that's was really good for me. That was part of why I wanted to go somewhere else and do it, because I wanted to like see how other people run their shows and touch equipment that I'm not used to and, you know, be exposed to a new group of people. So I chose to do one 4 hours away with the expectation that I wouldn't know most of the people and it would be new and different for me. And it was. And so from that aspect, it was really good. But the first event is Yoke, and Yoke happens to be one of my best and favorite events. And it was advertised as being a 30-foot, 360-pound yoke, and it ended up being a 420-pound, 60-foot yoke. So
whoa.
Quite a bit of a difference there.
Yeah, slight. Just tiny little wee bit.
Fortunately for me, I'm really good at yoke, so I did well in that event, and, you know, it wasn't an issue. Then the second event was log press, and press is one of my, it is my weakest movements. And I had been, excuse me, practicing yoke the most out of anything, I mean, press leading up to the contest, because I knew that I had all the other kind of things. I'm good with leg and back, and everything else is leg and back. And so when leading up to the contest, the thing that I had been most focused on was press. And I really wanted to get a personal record for my press. And I thought that I would be able to hit 145 or 150 because my last, one rep max was 140 on the log press. And, so when I won at 110 pounds, it was both really awesome that like I won with essentially my warm-up weight, but it was also kind of disappointing. Like, oh man, I didn't get to try to go for my one rep max. So there was that, and that was kind of a little like ho-hum. You know, my mom actually didn't even see it because she didn't realize that it was happening yet. Like, it happened so quickly, and but just awesome. I can't complain about, you know, doing so well. And then the third event was the car deadlift, which didn't move. So like I had two kind of disappointing events in a row with the log and then the car. I just was really disappointed in myself that I couldn't get the car off the ground. But I tried my best, and my back muscles were sore after from like holding the car up at a couple of inches and not being able to like lock it out all the way.
Yeah.
So I know that I like gave it my everything, and that if I wasn't sore, then I wouldn't have, you know, given it my everything. So, I wasn't strong enough for it. So then the fourth and fifth events I, really enjoyed and I did well at. And, the woman who came in second place gave me a run for my money in both those two events. And so that was fun. It's always nice to kind of like, you know, be driven and push yourself. And, there's an interesting, you know, kind of crowd there, different people I'm not used to and that sort of thing. But my mom came, Matt and the kids came, and then my trainer, Mike, and his girlfriend, who's also my friend, Caroline, came. So we had a good group of us there, and quite a few people were asking Mike and I a lot of questions about, like, where we train and what we do. And, you know, we impressed a few people, which was nice. So I walked away with my invitation to nationals and a first place gold medal, which was very exciting. But I'm hoping that the contest that I have in August, which is at Nova Strength and Conditioning, will be a little more competitive and push me to do things. Like, there are events in that competition that I'm not as good at, like keg carry and keg lift, and there's a press medley at 150 pounds for three implements, and right now I haven't ever gotten 150 yet. So those things will really push me to try to, you know, better myself in a way that I'm hoping I can. I made a bad life choice today and going to the gym, because I was like, I didn't really like super push myself on Saturday. I don't feel that tired. I don't feel that sore. I'm going to go today. 'Cause usually people take a week off after contests to let your central nervous system recover. And I went in and I was feeling great. And then like 10 minutes in, just simple bench pressing, I was like, every weight felt so heavy. It was just so heavy. And so I decided to not finish the workout and go home. And Mike was like, yeah, I wanted to tell you to leave when you came in, but I figured you'd figure it out yourself. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go. So that's what happened with me. And then Sunday, so that was Saturday in Roanoke, which is about 4 hours southwest of here. And then the Sunday was awesome because we went to a farm, which is basically between Roanoke and where we live. Our favorite farm used to be called Mount Vernon Farms. It's now called Heritage Hollows. And we did our annual farm tour with Mike and Molly and got to see the cows and the baby cows and the pigs and the piglets. And the kids tried to collect eggs from the chickens and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that was really nice. It was a beautiful day.
Tried and it succeeded, or tried and like...
There were no eggs. It had just been collected. Like, literally, we saw the guy who had collected it, like, driving off as we pulled up. So
okay. Were the chickens guarding their eggs?
The chickens were not happy about the children. I will say that. But, yeah, so we did the chicken thing and then hung out with Mike and Molly for a while. It's so wonderful to be around people who feel and live in a way that I so wholeheartedly endorse, but aren't necessarily part of the same movement. Like, it's nice and refreshing to have conversations from their perspective, but we're both coming from the same ideals, you know, so they have different insights and perspective than perhaps we do because they're purveyors of the food that we want to buy. And so, you know, being able to have an opportunity to talk with them about how they run their business and what the clientele, you know, has been for them and what they've seen the market interested in and that sort of thing is just really fascinating. And I'm grateful to have them as, at this point, friends. And, you know, like I said to all the people that came to the meetup group, they literally inspired us to write Beyond Bacon because their pork was so amazingly delicious that we started buying whole hogs. Like, that's what started it all for us. So
you may not remember, but I certainly do, that the first visit that I did to your place, not last summer, but like the summer before, for the release for Beyond Bacon, you actually fed me then Mount Vernon bacon. And it was so good. Like, it's you know, the kind of bacon that sticks in your memory like a year and a half later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. Good. So, it was quite an eventful weekend for me. We got home pretty, like 7 o'clock last night, Sunday. And then tried to relax and watch the CrossFit Games, which was... super exciting. I really enjoyed watching the CrossFit Games this year. Did you watch them at all, Sarah?
I didn't. I was in office reorganization land.
You should really... They have on the interwebs. Do you know about the interwebs? Have you heard of it before?
I've heard of them. I hear they're a series of tubes.
Yes. So if you can get inside the tubes, they've got recap shows of like the whole day kind of condensed down where you could enjoy, like they do with the Olympics, instead of watching it all day long, you could just watch 1 hour of the day. I highly recommend that you do that.
I think I would probably really enjoy that.
Yeah. Because I will tell you, I personally really enjoyed the games this year, more than I enjoyed the games last year, more than I enjoyed the Open this year. I felt like the type of movements and the variety and the different people that excelled, it was just amazing to watch. There were strongman movements incorporated into...
I heard there was a lot more strongman and Olympic lifting type stuff in it.
And several of the individual stuff, and even more so in the group stuff. So, not to say that CrossFit should become strongman, they're two different sports, but CrossFit is supposed to be the sport of fitness, and it was so heavily cardiovascular intensive last year that it wasn't very fun to watch either, just like watching people run for a long time. So this year I felt like the movements that they chose were coupled really well with, okay, well, if there was something cardio related, it was also like you needed to be able to do muscle ups. And if you couldn't do muscle ups, you were punished with more running as like a, you know, sort of, anyway, I don't want to get into it, but I felt like it really did make me think that they were trying to find the most fit person, because the person really did have to do heavy gymnastics in the open in order to get to the games. And then in the games, they had to be really strong, and there were cardio events, and there were all different kinds of things that I really enjoyed watching. Also, there were some things that us strong people would like Rogue to send us instead of kegs for lifting, which are like really hard. They had basically soft kegs that like Rogue had made that looked like giant awesome pillows that were like 100 pounds. I'm like, I would much prefer to lift that than a keg. Like, can I get that? And then they had these like sandbag with a handle type things that looked much more comfortable than the sandbags without handles that we use. And I'm like, yeah, they've got a good thing going over there. We should get in on that action. So it's interesting. If people want a lot more information on my thoughts on the games and my weekend at the Strongman event, I do like a very detailed recap in our brand new launched Strong Woman Radio podcast. So I promise I will stop plugging that here, but just because I'm talking about those things, if you are interested in finding out a whole lot more, I talked about it for a really long time in the Strong Woman Radio podcast that should be up by the time this goes airs, if iTunes gets their stuff together. But if not, it'll be out shortly after this, so...
That's awesome. I did one rep maxes today.
Yeah? For a CrossFit total? I feel like you just did that.
Yeah, 9 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yep, so I PR'd everything.
As you should. Good job.
I PR'd my back squat by 30 pounds. So I did a 150-pound back squat.
Nice.
I did a 72-pound strict press, which was a 7-pound PR, which I tried to do 75 pounds, and I could not lift it over
strict press jumps go really slow.
Yeah. I was like, you know.
For perspective, my strict press is 115.
That seems like a lot to me after, like, 72 pounds was like, I was screaming. Little known fact about me, I scream and grunt and growl a lot in CrossFit. I have the badge for loudest person in my box. There's like a running gag about how I like scare the kids in the daycare at the YMCA down the street. And then I PR'd my deadlift by 40 pounds. So I did a 225 pound deadlift.
Nice.
So I think I'll be feeling it tomorrow. Yeah, it was, I've been looking forward to it. Like, even though I had two and a half weeks, the last 2.5 weeks that the book went to the printer and I was traveling and I was getting ready for my brother's wedding and I just couldn't get out of the house and could not make it to CrossFit for like 2.5 weeks. Like, the most I was able to do was do some push-ups, and I discovered that my mom's like water jugs were really good for front squats. So I would like change the water in her like water cooler thing, and I would front squat the jug before I would, you know, a few times before I would change
practical it. Application
there you go. So like to be making such good gains over 8 weeks having taken 2.5 weeks off was like really awesome. So yeah, it made me feel all happy and strong and looking forward to seeing the leaderboard tomorrow because there's a chance I might be on it with my deadlift.
Sweet.
I know. So we'll see. We'll see what other strong women came in the evening after my class. So, it was awesome. I enjoyed it. And I bought myself a jump rope, or I ordered myself a jump rope because can you do double unders?
No. Well, really, I'm not interested in trying. I know that, like, I know that that's a thing that I should do, but, I don't know.
I can't.
There's,
I can't.
Like, a bazillion reasons I don't like them.
Yeah. Well, the jumping and the fact that they're highly technical, like, the timing is so crucial, and there's, like, you have to jump slow and high and then whip that rope around. And in exactly twice as fast as you're jumping so you can keep doing them. It's, I've been watching like YouTube, like how to do double under videos, and because I can't do them. But my box has been like, if there's jump roping in a wad, they let you do twice as many singles. If you
can't they make us do 3 or 4 times as many singles to really motivate you.
They're changing their policy effective August 1st, which I guess is Friday, and they're going to make us do 3 times singles. And you're right, it is highly motivating. So, like today during warm up, I'm like, row, no way. I'm going to pull out the jump rope for 5 minutes and I'm going to warm up with the jump rope instead of rowing because I want to be practicing these double unders. So, I ordered myself like a real jump rope and it's really, I never had any kind of realization at any point in my life ever before that there is a real jump rope thing that is not the same as the dollar bin at Target jump rope that I buy my kids. And like the, you know, figuring out what weight of cord to get and exactly how many inches long it should be is like, it became this like hugely technical, I had to make choices and it's like an investment in a piece of equipment because they are really not cheap. So, this is my goal now, is to figure out how to do double unders because my jumping kind of clicked last week. I was able to jump onto the 24-inch box. That's what we talked about last week because that was the first day I was able to do that. And I had a wad later in the week that had it was an AMRAP and each round had 10 box jumps. And I did the box jumps onto the 20-inch box, which is the first time I ever even tried to do more than like 3 or 4 20-inch box jumps in a row. Like that was huge for me. I ended up doing 30 of them. So I'm like, okay, I can jump on a box. Now let me see if I can jump over a rope. And it's not the same thing, surprisingly. So this is my new like obsession. I'll probably bring a jump rope in my suitcase to AHS so that I can just jump rope places. probably not in public because those ropes are dangerous, man. Yeah, this is my new thing. I want to be able to jump rope. I've had a great week. Can you tell? I'm like all bubbly and
I'm like already fading even though we have like an actual show planned today.
I've been sleeping well. My stress level is clearly much lower. I've lost a few pounds, which just makes me feel like amazing. Just finally hoping that things are clicking and it's not just like scale variation, but I feel good and it's nice to feel good. It's been a while.
Well, I'm glad you feel good.
Should we tell what our show's about? That we're actually doing a real show?
Yeah, I think you should because you already shared an Instagram picture of my text to you, which is basically saying I'm not sure that I can survive the whole show.
I thought we came up with some really outstanding rules to podcast by. I looked at that and I was like, oh, this is just how everybody.
You forgot the rule that Matt made for podcasting, which is that I'm no longer allowed to eat when we record.
Has he decided that? Has he been like editing out the chewing noises?
Yes. And he gets really frustrated with me.
Well, I did an interview of my oldest daughter on the blog a while ago, and she was snacking on a Lair bar or a Clif Kit bar during the interview. And it was only like 10 minutes, but I went through and I actually edited out all of her noises. And that's like a grueling job. It's really not fun. So I understand where Matt's coming from, but that's, are you starving? Did you just, no,
eat. I ate.
You got to eat. Okay. Phew. Cause then podcasting hungry is not going to work well either.
I know. I usually like linger and do accessory work after I work out because I'm a national competitive strong woman. And so when I work out, I do like hours of working out, and I'm just on podcast nights. I can't do that anymore. I have to come home a half an hour earlier so I can eat and not chew in everyone's ear. Anyway, what's the show about?
Oh, the show. Hey, we're going to talk about teenagers.
I don't have one.
Me neither.
Maybe we should bring someone on.
I think that's an excellent idea. Let's bring on someone who's just written a book geared towards teenage girls.
Sweet.
But before we bring on our like magical teenage expert guest, how about a like teenager-themed Science with Sarah?
You were getting a Science with Sarah?
I know. I told you I had a good week.
I think that pigged wings, like buffalo style, would be really delicious because it sounds like pigs might be flying soon.
I have no response to that. I actually read about stuff and actually learned some things. Should we do it?
I'm waiting.
Okay. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So this week's Science with Sarah is actually, I thought, a really interesting topic. So one of the things that I was thinking about as we were preparing for this podcast was how diet can affect the challenges that puberty present for a teenager. So, you know, as teenagers, you know, we have changes in our sleep patterns, changes in our moods. There's sort of a natural defiance. It can be really, really tough. I actually found this medical journal article, and I'm gonna read the sentence because it really summarizes, I think, the teenage experience in a really kind of sad way. So it says, in addition to the hormonal and metabolic changes that are characteristic of puberty, adolescence is associated with rapid behavioral changes that may impact on diabetes control. This particular article is about diabetes. Adolescent behavior typically involves challenging of authority figures, nonconformity, efforts at establishing autonomy, rebellious and pleasure-seeking behavior, privacy, and heightened awareness of self-image and peer pressure, and the emergence of eating disorders in some girls. The process of maturation both affects and is affected by the presence of chronic illnesses like diabetes. And I just thought that description of like what it is to be a teenager, you know, was really, even though it's really technical, it kind of sums it up, and it's really not fun. So because we're going to be talking a little bit about, you know, paleo diet for teenagers, I kind of wanted to look at, you know, diet links with some of those changes. And I started looking at, you know, do we know in the medical literature diet factors that might exaggerate the hormonal changes? And I really found that there's been very, very little clinical studies to actually look at that. There's a few things in the context of, you know, diabetes. There's a few things in the context of acne and dairy sensitivities, or acne and sugar. But I couldn't find any like really compelling links between, at least that have been well studied in the medical literature, between sort of overall diet patterns and just the challenge of being a teenager. But I happened on something else that I thought was really interesting. And that was actually a link between puberty and insulin resistance. And it turns out that actually insulin resistance is something that happens on the onset of puberty naturally, even in non-diabetic and non-predisposed to diabetes adolescents. So this started off as studies actually trying to understand diabetes onset during puberty. And what they ended up discovering was that the insulin levels in especially young adolescents, so it's sort of the during that first initial rush of sex hormones and growth hormone. So in the sort of 12 to 14 year age range, there is
a significant increase in insulin in the blood and a significant increase in insulin resistance. So the body's not as sensitive to insulin by like 30 to 50%, depending on the study. Like that's a pretty substantial amount. And the reason why this is interesting in diabetes research is they have found that teenagers need to adjust their doses of insulin during those couple of years, right, on sort of the onset of puberty. And then once they get to about 16 years old, they can start decreasing their insulin again because they become more insulin sensitive. And so what's really interesting right now is there's just an early understanding of what the culprit is. And it seems to be the dramatic increase in growth hormone, especially. And that there's probably some feedback with the sex hormones. There's probably some feedback with stress because of neurological changes that are making teenagers more susceptible to stress in their environment. But that there's a sort of a cascade of hormonal effects starting with growth hormone that leads to insulin resistance. But what also is really interesting is that this kind of happens across the board. So there's some small variations. If you're underweight or overweight, you might experience more insulin resistance as a teenager than if you're an sort of average healthy weight. But it seems to happen sort of to no matter who you are. So the big question is, like, what does that mean for the average teenager? So one of the things that we know, when you have insulin resistance, if you eat sugar, that increases your blood sugar higher than if you didn't have insulin resistance. And we know that there's some pretty awful long-term effects of having chronically elevated blood sugar. That's why diabetics go blind. That's why diabetics have kidney failure. That's why diabetics have such a high range of having blood clot issues and having to have legs amputated. And so having high blood sugar is really not good. And it's something that in the paleo diet is really designed to help do, is to help regulate blood sugars by having these sort of slower burn carbohydrates balanced with fat and protein in every meal. So what there isn't right now an understanding of in the medical literature is whether or not having elevated blood sugar for a few years as an early teenager, whether or not that has any long-term health effect. But I think it's a really neat rationale for, at the very least, with diet changes, working to regulate blood sugar. So working to have meals that are consistent of protein, fat, and slow burn carbohydrates like, you know, sweet potatoes or plantains or yuca or rice, and getting away from foods that increase blood sugar really dramatically, like any kind of sweets, like any kind of wheat products. I mean, bread increases the sugar in your blood as much as eating 6 spoonfuls of sugar. So so avoiding those foods are going to help regulate blood sugar, which is going to be especially important in those early teenage years when people are naturally insulin resistant. I thought that was like a really cool,
It's fascinating.
Cool in a yet another way it sucks to be a teenager.
Makes me question all the things that happened at puberty for me. But, you know, what you gonna do now?
I think we should bring on our guest now is I think what we should do now.
And maybe our guest can help people not have the faith that I had. Awesome.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So, for this week's special guest with an actual themed show, high five, Sarah.
Thanks, man. It's like all this like extra spare time I have now that I'm not working on a book.
Bonus. So, we welcome Leslie Klinke. Welcome, Ooh. Leslie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Leslie is the author of the recently released Paleo Girl, correct?
Yes.
And she's got a website and, like me, utilizes Instagram best as her favorite social media platform. So you can find her there. I'll let her spell her name out for you if you're looking for her. But Leslie has kind of become the teenage expert, so to speak. We're going to cross our fingers and hope we're going to have a teenage show for you. And where we're not exactly sure, we're just going to blame it on Sarah and make her talk about science a little bit. But we know that we do have some questions from parents who are interested in helping their teenagers. And even we get on our website from teenagers themselves. And I can personally recommend, we've got a couple of guest posts on the blog from teenagers, Slim Palette being kind of the most famous. The Paleo Foodie Teen was also, I'm sorry?
They're both amazing.
Amazing, right?
It's yes,
incredible
absolutely.
Stories and talents and great role models for young adults. And then, there's one more I was thinking of, but I can't remember right now. So I can say I personally recommend them, but if you're looking for information on kind of how to relate, then Leslie can be a great place to find that. In particular, our paleo sitter, Sam, did a review on our blog of your book, and she actually asked me if she could keep it, because most of the books we ask, once people are done reviewing them, to give back to us, and she loved your book so much that she actually kept it, because she herself is still a teen. She's 19, and so she really related to and enjoyed your book a lot, so...
That's awesome.
Good job.
So nice of you to let her keep it, too. You could have been like, no, buy your own!
So, I'm
sharing,
like,
is caring.
Please keep taking care of my children and feeding them awesome food. Yes, you may have that book.
It's a bonus.
Yes. So welcome to the Paleo View.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and maybe how you got into being this connector, so to speak, of the teenage crowd?
Sure. Well, for starters, I didn't really discover paleo myself. I'd say maybe it was like 3 years ago. It's not like I've been paleo since I was a teenager. I actually was quite the yo-yo dieter my entire life. Probably more than a decade, I've been yo-yo dieting back and forth, up and down, all over the place. I was even vegetarian for a while. So when I had...
That's a crime I have also committed.
I think that a lot of us have. I think that people that are paleo are all about just kind of figuring themselves out. So it's only natural to, you know, check out every type of lifestyle that's out there. And so I think a lot of us have been vegetarian. So it is what it is. But yeah, when I had the opportunity to write this book, I basically just kind of looked into my past first as a place to start, as, you know, what would I have wanted to read when I was that age? What areas would have really helped me? So this book, it's not just here's how you should eat and here's how you should work out and good luck. I mean, it's a whole lifestyle book. And I go through, of course, those foundations. But then I also go into the importance of, you know, sun, sleep, and play. I go through puberty, motivation. I even talk about some of the more difficult stuff like eating disorders, peer pressure, all of that stuff. So really, it's just everything that I would have liked to have read when I was younger. And in the book, there's also a lot of success stories. And I was able to reach out to a lot of teenagers and see what their struggles were and what's been helpful for them. So it was just this really great thing that kind of all came together.
It's a really tremendous resource. And I just love how visual it is and how approachable it is. Like, I don't think that I could write a book that teenagers would relate to. Like, I don't think that I could channel a voice. I would just sound like somebody's mom telling me what to do. And yeah. I think it's just really amazing that you were able to, you know, write in a way that at least, you know, my perspective is, and certainly the reviews seem to be supporting, in a way that a teenager could take that and relate to it and feel like it's a friend giving them information,
right,
and be able to make really positive changes in their life, as opposed to feeling like yet another person telling them what to do and then sort of triggering that, you know, rebellious, you know, how dare you authority figure tell me what to do. And I think that if I had attempted anything even remotely like this, I would have come off as the, like, authority figure to rebel against.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that because, I mean, I myself, when I was younger, I was kind of like, you know, rebellious in that sense too, that I just wanted to go against the norm. And honestly, I just wrote the book in my voice. I wasn't putting on a character or trying to sound younger than my spirit feels that it is. Like, I was just sitting there talking to someone like as if they were sitting next to me. I just wanted it to be really relatable and approachable in that sense. So I'm really happy that it came across that way.
Well, I think that we should maybe do the rest of this teenager themed show and take advantage of your insight and knowledge on the subject.
Okay, perfect.
So our first question is from Arlene from Franklin, Tennessee. Our whole family is mostly paleo, except kiddos who are 13 and not sure the other age, who are reluctant to give up wheat bread sandwiches at lunch. They are ready to give it up, but are concerned about when they have to eat out at someone's house or they have no choice but to eat gluten that they will feel really yucky. I know as an adult it's easier to make choices, but as a kid when you're at someone else's house and all there is to eat is pizza or sandwiches, how do they handle it? They're already so great about telling folks that they don't eat sugar. My kids are concerned that when they completely give up gluten, sandwich, bread, and pizza, that when they do have it at a party or friend's house, that they'll feel horrible. So how do I help them through this? They're already about 90% paleo, and I can notice the difference when they eat something that's not paleo.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's not just a problem that kids have. That's going to be a problem that anyone faces. I myself can go to someone's house and to a party or whatever, and there's going to be a bunch of pizza and snacks. Like, it's difficult for anyone, honestly. And so I guess there's some different ways that you could approach it. One of those being that, like for me, I would eat before I go somewhere, but that's not so practical for a child, especially because they don't want to feel like an outcast or feel like they're different than everyone else. So maybe even if they were to bring like some type of snack, not just for themselves, but for everyone that everyone could have and enjoy together, I think that, you know, that could be helpful in itself. But also at the end of the day, you know, there's always the 80-20 rule. And, you know, if they know going into it how they're going to feel, if they think that they're going to feel icky or yucky from having a certain food that's going to make them feel like crap, then, you know, it's good for them to know that going into it. That's something that even adults sometimes don't even have a hold on. So that's really great that they can recognize that. And maybe just having that knowledge will help them not overeat the item, whatever it is. Say if there's like pizza, you know, maybe they'll just have one slice, or maybe they'll just eat the cheese and the meat and veggies and stuff off the top of it and throw the crust away. There's a lot of different ways that you can approach that, I think. Yeah.
Stacey, do you want to jump in?
I guess, you know, for 13 and let's say the other teenagers older, I would think it would be old enough to kind of sit down and explain what is physiologically happening when their body has a reaction to gluten and how that is their body's way of telling them that it doesn't... that it's hurting their body in ways that they might not be able to see, that they could potentially, you know, be prolonging a leaky gut, and that, you know, they're making all these other sacrifices regularly in their lives. And if they choose to eat sandwiches once a day or even a couple of times a week at a friend's house or something, that really does have big implications in how their body is able to heal. I would also say that, you know, Chris Kresser has some good information out there about how once you do heal your body, there's kind of like a bell curve of where it gets worse for a while, but then when you're exposed, you feel a lot better. And I know that Sarah and I have been experiencing that where, you know, after a long time of healing and working on getting ourselves healthy, that now when we are exposed to certain things, we don't have nearly as much of a reaction as we used to have from it. So I think if the kids are old enough and rational to kind of have that discussion, then it becomes, okay, well, let's help them figure out how to make better choices. And I know kids don't want to be different, but I also know that my kids don't want to be sick. So, you know, my almost 9 year old is willing to, you know, be the first one to say, can I bring in, you know, gluten-free bread or gluten-free pizza. Like when they have pizza parties at school, Matt actually brings like a gluten-free Z pizza sometimes just because he doesn't want to feel left out. And we know that that won't make him violently ill, but it won't throw off his day or following days after the way that if he ate pizza would. So it's a good compromise for us. I would say that it is really difficult, and, you know, the same techniques that we use on younger kids, using on older kids to say, okay, well, what are your favorite foods? Like, you don't have to have a sandwich in your lunchbox every day. What are some of your other favorite foods that you really like? And let's see if we can play off of some of those and just avoid sandwiches altogether. I don't know. Sarah?
Yeah.
I don't think of anything to add. I mean, I think we kind of covered it from a few different angles there. You know, I have kids who have, you know, gluten sensitivity. And so when they do get exposed to gluten, like it's not pretty. And my youngest is ridiculously sensitive to dairy. I mean, it's so... She's so sensitive. It's basically like having a celiac in the house, except it's casein that we have to worry about instead of gluten that we have to worry about. And so for us, it's just a non-starter. Like we just like, there is no gluten. And for my youngest, there is no dairy. And so even if they're at a friend's house, I mean, it's not up for negotiation because of how sick it will make them. And I think that what happens for a lot of people when they're first starting paleo, I mean, there's usually a reason why we're choosing to try this diet. And for some people, they just want to be healthier, or they are elite athletes and they want to improve performance. For a lot of people, it's a desire to lose weight. And then for a lot of people, it's like health conditions. They just don't feel well. And whether it's like something that's been diagnosed, that's been a huge battle, or if it's just like, they don't feel great. And they just love the idea that they're going to be able to have energy and feel awesome. So when it's those types of things, you know, weight issues or health conditions that are bringing you to a paleo diet, I think it's a big surprise for a lot of people just how sensitive they are to gluten and often dairy as well. And it's something that you don't really know until you've cut it out. And just like Stacey was mentioning about the bell curve of response, what happens is when you're having an immune reaction to gluten, you have certain cells that are responsible for the reaction. And then you have other cells that are kind of responsible for keeping everything reined in. And so even though you're having this big reaction, there are both, you know, both types of cells. And what happens when you cut something out of your diet is the cells whose job it is to kind of rein everything in, they die off faster than the cells that are sort of trained to have this reaction to gluten. And so, or whatever it is that you have a food intolerance to. And so then if you get exposed before your gut has healed and your immune system is regulated and all of those cells have died, is you end up having this even more exaggerated reaction because the cells that used to be there to help control everything aren't there. And so what happens is you go long enough, your gut is healed, your immune system's well controlled, you've been eating a nutrient dense diet, you've figured out activity, you've figured out stress and sleep. Then you get to a point where those cells that are responsible for having the reaction aren't there. And then you don't even need the ones that are responsible for keeping everything reined in. And you have a really healthy gut, so you're getting less across the gut anyways. And you have a really well-controlled immune system, so your immune system's not going to freak out over a tiny exposure. And that's where, you know, once you've really healed and you've gotten to this place where occasional exposure of something isn't a problem, and some people start that way. I mean, some people who come to paleo diets start already at that place where they can have something that has gluten in it once a week and they are fine. Or maybe they feel a little bit icky for an hour or two, so they don't do it that often, but it's okay. And so it's one of those things that, you know, you kind of don't know until you really cut it out, whether or not you're that sensitive. And it does make things more challenging. It does make just the logistics of life hard. But you know, as I think you've both sort of said, is feeling good is worth it. Feeling good is worth that problem of trying to figure out how to stay gluten-free when you're at a friend's house. And that is might be something that for a lot of not just teenagers, but just people who are trying to figure out their own health is kind of a realization I think a lot of people need to come to on their own, just by, you know, trying it and getting to that point. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think something else to stress, though, it's definitely good to educate your kids and let them understand what's happening. But there's a very fine line between educating them and then sometimes scaring them, because I definitely would never want a kid to develop an eating disorder because they then fear that certain food. And so they don't know what to do and they just kind of start to avoid food altogether. So I think it's just really important to develop just overall good, healthy eating habits.
Definitely.
Hear, hear. So our second question is from Beth from Los Gatos, California. I think I pronounced that correctly. Stacy, should I ask you?
No, I have no idea.
All right. I'm going to assume I pronounced the name of that town or city correctly. I'm trying very slowly to transition my 14 and 11-year-old boys to a healthier lifestyle. I can't even say I will get them to go paleo, but if we can even can head that direction, I know it will be a win. My younger son, who's about to turn 12, does not like much in the way of protein. He will eat eggs, but is not a fan of most kinds of meat or fish. There are just a few staples I repeat often. At any rate, I'm wondering how many eggs are too many eggs. We have 22 chickens, so eggs are abundant, and he will eat scrambled eggs and even the occasional hard-boiled, but I don't want him to get too much of a good thing. Thanks for all you do. I'm so looking forward to Sarah's new book, as I have Hashimoto's and know you'll have a lot of autoimmune info. I've had it on pre-order for months, it seems. Which I think actually means this question might have been in our queue since before the Paleo Approach came out. I am terribly sorry, Beth, for taking so long to get your question. Leslie, do you want to give a stab at what to do if the only protein you like is eggs?
Well, for starters, I'm insanely jealous of all of their chickens. Like, it's my dream to have chickens, so that's awesome. I think it's great that he loves eggs. I mean, eggs are such a solid food to eat. They have a lot of nutrients and amazingness to them. So it's really great that he can eat eggs. To me, I say, you know, if go to town on them. I don't know. I mean, sure, it would be important to get a lot of other types of nutrients and protein into his diet. But I mean, at the end of the day, eating eggs for breakfast every day is better than eating donuts. So for me, I think that's a win in itself that he likes eggs. Being picky can be a tricky thing. It seems like, since you mentioned he doesn't really like many different types of meats or fish, it sounds like he has tried a lot of stuff. But I think that, you know, just keep trying different things. Try a different food every day if possible, or at least a couple times a week, because you never know what you can discover that a kid will like. And something to keep in mind, too, like a kid or a teenager, their taste buds are incredibly different from that of an adult. I can look back at the things that I liked to eat when I was younger, and they're so different from how they are now. It took me forever just to like tomatoes. And I mean, I remember them tasting awful. And I remember exactly what that flavor was. And it's so different from what it is now. So just keep influencing healthy food choices and keep bad food choices out of the house. And I think eventually it'll all come together.
I think this age is a little old for what we usually recommend when kids have a protein aversion. In that younger children often have a protein aversion because it's difficult to chew meat in general, and then we recommend kind of working on softer meats and braised meats, and then trying to, you know, slowly build up that muscle development so that they are comfortable chewing more tough meats. But I think for this, it's, you know, at 14 years old, it's not a jaw muscular development issue. It's definitely like a taste preference, what he's been exposed to issue. I would wonder if things like homemade fish sticks and homemade chicken nuggets might be introductory additional proteins. I mean, the real question is how many eggs is too many eggs? I think, like Leslie says, eggs are incredibly nutrient dense, especially if they're from the chickens in your backyard and, you know that they're pastured and getting bugs and that kind of stuff. But just because something's nutrient dense doesn't mean that it's got all of the nutrients that somebody needs. As much as I love broth, I can't live off of broth alone because I need other nutrients. So if you are able to find foods, again, you know, talk with the child and say, well, what do you like and how can we, you know, figure out to get you things that you do like. So, if it's, you know, making a scramble with eggs, we're able to chop up chicken or ham or bacon or something into that. I know my kids love things wrapped in bacon. Even if it's like bacon wrapped dates, or you could stuff dates with sausage, things that, are more like highly palatable foods that would have protein in them. My friend Amy and our photographer did this with her daughter. Her daughter was much younger, but her daughter had an aversion to protein. And she just worked for a really long time. I mean, it took years just offering her more and more proteins and focusing positively on the things she did like. She really liked lamb sausage. And of course, Amy was like, of all the things, it has to be like the most expensive food in the world. But I think Amy learned to make homemade lamb sausage with just ground lamb and then incorporated that into a lot of different foods and would tell her, okay, it has lamb sausage in it, and then she'd be willing to try it. So if there are things that the child likes, maybe try to appeal to them in that sort of way.
That was really good. I
nailed it.
Yeah.
On to the next.
Yeah, let's just move on. Let's keep going. Let's do a third question. Our third question is from Rena from Sunnyvale, California. My main question is about my kids' nutrition. They are very picky eaters and limited in their vegetable variety. They also don't like most cooked vegetables or any mixed creations. And I feel your pain, Rena, because mine are the same, even though they're 3 years younger than your kids. Some of the paleo recipes have hit home with them, like beef meatballs, baked cauliflower, kale chips, paleo parents, freezeable waffles. I will second that those are awesome. Pumpkin muffins and pumpkin pancakes. But I'm having a hard time figuring out what to give them for snack time and lunch at school. They are away for 6 to 7 hours, and I want them to be fueled properly. They come home very hungry. I suspect they do not have sufficient protein and are addicted to sugar and carbs. Do we have packable protein suggestions?
That's well, tricky. I mean,
I didn't hear her mention fat either, so maybe I'll start it off by saying that as awesome as protein is, I find that my children are most satiated when they have a high-fat breakfast and lunch. So that could be something to consider when we're answering the question.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm curious, I mean, depending on how picky they are. I mean, she said that she couldn't even like trick them into eating like fruits and veggies and mixes and stuff. Like, I'm wondering then if that kind of eliminates trying different veggies that are dipped in like something, like if you get something with almond butter on it, or even like a cheese, if they can tolerate dairy, or you know, or even just putting something into, I don't really do juicing, but like if you actually have a blender and you keep all of the good stuff in there, if there's a way to get them to drink that stuff that way, it's always an option. But if they're really, really picky, then I don't know. I mean, it's just a matter of trying to find ways to hide it into the food, or just letting them try different things to see if maybe one day one thing will stick.
Sarah, you want to ratchet off your... I feel like you always have good ideas for kids' snacks, and I can just...
Yeah, you know what,
nod
actually,
after you're done.
Funnily enough, I actually talked about packing lunches in my newsletter this past weekend. So it's something that, because my kids start school a week today, It's been something that's been sort of on my mind. So what we do is, for lunches anyways, I pack a lunch with a reusable freezer pack in an insulated lunchbox. And that gives me so many options in terms of protein, because I can pack, my kids love grass-fed hot dogs. I'm fortunate that they love them cold and right out of the package. As an adult, that just makes me go, ugh. But we'll pack all kinds of like deli meats made with quality meat. So Applegate Farms is pretty easy to find, and they have a lot of different options for uncured deli meats, some made with grass-fed beef, some made with I think it's not fully pasteurized pork, but it's like compassionately treated pork, free-range chicken. So they have a bunch of options. U.S. Wellness Meats has great uncured deli meats using really, really high-quality meat. Tropical Traditions has some options. I'm trying to think. I think Tendergrass Farms has come up with a few things now, like they've got a new jerky. So it's getting like easier and easier to find portable protein that can, you know, that's on the deli meat kind of side of things. And my kids, you know, they're pretty picky. They don't like most deli meats, but there's still a pretty good selection of stuff that they like. So I can still rotate through a few different things. We pack hard-boiled eggs. For my youngest, she loves canned salmon, just like straight out of the can. So I'll pack that with a fork. I know that's like not every kid's thing. And especially as you get to be a teenager, you don't really want to be packing smelly foods. There's a few different brands now of like meat sticks, pepperoni sticks type things that are made with grass-fed beef. So I know Steve's Paleo Goods has them. U.S. Wellness Meats has them. I think there's one called Chomps that's also made with grass-fed beef. And there's
Nick's Sticks is another
Nick's
one.
Sticks. There's Epic Bars, which are made with grass-fed, depending on, or pasteurized, depending on what it is. I think they've got a bison one, a beef one, a lamb one, and a turkey one. So those are all, I mean, I think really great options. And then certainly like the meat sticks or the Epic Bars, you wouldn't need any refrigeration. There's a lot of recipes out there for paleo treats that have protein powder added. So if your kids aren't sensitive to whey protein powder, or if you can find an egg white protein powder or a, you know, beef hydrosylate or, you know, something like that, that your kids tolerate, and you can make one of those treats. They're often nut based, but as a snack, that's a good way to have a portable protein for a snack. I tend not to worry too much about protein for my kids' snacks. It's definitely more challenging for me to pack like a refrigerated lunchbox and a refrigerated snack box. So I just load them up on protein within their lunch. Other things that I pack, leftover chicken, because my kids both like that. I mean, you could do any kind of leftover meat that's, you know, something that you would put on a salad. Like you could do like salad shrimp or, you know, sliced steak or, you know, like whatever your kids like. You know, a lot of kids like jerky. You can do like fish jerky, like salmon jerky, smoked fish. I mean, all of those things are relatively portable. So I kind of feel like as soon as you add in the, you know, freezer pack into the equation and you're thinking about like, okay, now I can keep things cold for 7 hours. It's a whole new ball game. And it's basically whatever you like to eat cold, you can pack. And there's also a huge range now of like insulated containers. Like I think it's Lunchbots has a bunch of different insulated containers that will keep things cold for hours and hours and hours. So that, you know, also opens up a whole range of possibilities. So it's basically like finding a lunchbox that your kids is going to think is cool to bring to school and then pack it full of, you know, food that they like to eat cold. I think that's the trick is what
another trick is to like use your bottle of water as the, ice device. So, or in my kid's case, like we'll put the U.S. Wellness meat sticks from the freezer in their lunchbox, and so it thaws by the time they have lunch, but it keeps the rest of their food cold. The only other thing that you didn't mention is, like I mentioned with fat, I've noticed a big difference in my kids' abilities to not come home gnawing at their own arm if they've been sufficiently, not just protein, but had fat during the day. So the easiest things that we've been doing lately for more fat are the Steve's Paleo kits that have the coconut in them, because they don't have nuts in them. So you can choose to get, it's got meat, coconut, and strawberries, or it's got meat, coconut, and pineapple. So if your kids are in a nut-free room, they can still have those. And the coconut is really filling. The other thing is, my kids love those 100-calorie packs of guacamole. So they'll dip deli meat in them. They'll dip carrot sticks in them. My kids also really love coconut milk yogurt or almond milk yogurt, which has a good amount of fat. And in the case of almond milk, I think it's got some protein too. If you're doing grass-fed or high-quality dairy, you could certainly do a full-fat yogurt, and that would work really well in terms of both protein and fat. If your kids can do nuts, that's another source of fat and protein. My kids really like macadamia nuts, and they're lower in omega-6 than some of the other nuts. Black olives is another one that we put in the kids' lunches keeps really well. They enjoy goofing around and putting it on their fingertips. I mean, if you have older kids, they might not like that joke, but
I still do that.
Yeah, exactly. I think anybody at any age does that. And it's got a good healthy fats in them. It's just really thinking outside the box. I think that the hard thing is that we can tell you what works for our kids, but what works for Sarah's kids doesn't work for my kids, and what works for my kids doesn't work for her kids. And it's really about, I think what Leslie mentioned earlier, in having kind of reasonable discussions with your kids and not creating fear and not creating a hostile environment, but really a positive space where you say to them in the grocery store, listen, I know you're really frustrated that we can't get a lot of the things in the inside of the aisles, but let's walk around and pick out, you can pick out 5 things that, let's read the ingredients together. And if it sounds like something you want to try, I'm willing to let you try it. And it might be that they, pick up gluten-free granola bars that have some grains and some sugar in them, honey or whatever, raw cane syrup or whatever you're comfortable with. And normally you might say to yourself, oh, I really wish that they weren't eating this. But if it means that they're more willing to then try guacamole and canned salmon, if they also get to try these granola bars, then it's a reasonable compromise. I mean, none of us are perfectly paleo all the time. And I think a lot of us parents have this expectation that we want our children to be so healthy, and therefore we want them to, have this pristine gut health and be healthy all the time. But I try to live by the mindset that my children are their own human beings, and they make their own decisions, and that I'm here to help them and guide them, but I can't force them or make choices for them. So, if the worst thing that my kids want when we go to the grocery store is some gluten-free granola bars, or they really like the chocolate milk, coconut milk containers. I don't know if you've seen those, but they're basically the little chocolate milk juice boxes, but they're making them with coconut milk and almond milk now. And my kids love those, and they know that they can't have them every day, but they're willing to eat black olives and tuna and guacamole and carrots in their lunch if they get one chocolate milk, coconut milk, yogurt, not a juice box. It's a milk box. I don't know what to call it. They feel the same way about coconut milk yogurt. They think the world of it, and it doesn't have the best ingredients in it. But if the rest of their lunchbox is healthy, nourishing foods, I just don't worry about them having, something like that. Oh, another really good one is those Inca plantain chips. My kids psycho love those, and they're especially good with the guacamole. So that's a good, starchy carb with some fat on it. Yeah, they're super filling.
Yeah.
So I mean, hopefully we've given you some ideas. There's basically, you can go onto Amazon.com and type in gluten-free, or probably at this point you can even type in paleo and you're going to get like 1,000 snack returns. There's also this really cool website that we found last week. I think it's called One Stop Paleo Shop, and every single thing on their website is paleo, and it's like snack foods and that kind of stuff. And I basically told the kids that they each had $20 and they could go on the website and choose whatever they wanted, and it was like Christmas for them. They were so excited. And meanwhile, I'm like, ha ha ha, it's all paleo. So if you can find ways to, you know, compromise and allow your children to make the choices and be empowered and find things that they like, I think it can go a lot more positively. And you never want kids to be hungry. Like, overpack the lunches. I mean, my kids usually come home with like one or two things left over in their lunchbox, because we would much rather give them too much food and have them come home with leftovers and then repack it again the next day than for them to come home like they have sometimes and be, oh my God, I'm so starving. I had a hard time listening to the last hour of school because I was so hungry. You know, and that's, it's an unfortunate situation for them. They're not grown-ups. They can't just walk to the fridge and go get something. Or, you know, if I'm at work, I can, you know, pull out things from my drawer, or I can even run to the store if I want to. But a kid in school is literally told to sit here and don't move in this spot and focus on learning. And if they're hungry, that's going to be really hard to do.
Yeah, we actually, I overpack lunches, and then we start our afternoon snack with finish whatever's in your lunch that you didn't finish at lunchtime, and then round it out if they still need something else. And that works really, really well for us.
Lizzie, any parting thoughts?
No, I think that what you guys said is pretty spot on. I mean, that's really great advice. And, you know, saying to go online and find stuff, like, that's a great idea too. And I know places like Julian Bakery too, like, they have some really amazing things that you can get that are super healthy, have a lot of nutrients, and they're going to be kid friendly. Like, the new paleo cereal is amazing. Like, I could eat that every single day. It's so good.
I have not seen nor tried it, but
it's amazing.
I'm sure. And the granola bar is another one that my kids really like. It's the Sarah. Did you try those at Paleo FX?
Which granola bar?
Granola bar.
Oh, I did try them. They were so good.
I was shocked to read the nutritional label. First of all, I read it while I was carb cycling, so I'm like, oh, okay, so I can never eat this because there's so many carbs and fats in the bar. But like, one of those is essentially equivalent to like a full adult size meal, because it's so packed with like coconut oil, nuts. It, like, one of those would go, like, my kids can't even finish one. They usually split one. So Lara bars, things like that, you know. We've all got recipes for how to make all those homemade things, but I know when you're a parent of multiple children, it's difficult to do that. So it's amazing how many good options there are out these days, and we should not let our children go hungry, for sure. And the other thing, I didn't hear you mention it, Sarah, I know you can't do this at school, but it really helps them like before and after school, is coconut milk smoothies. That is like one of the things that my kids are always thrilled about. They love to make.
My kids are not smoothie kids.
Your kids are weird.
This is absolutely true. I agree 100%.
My kids love, love, love to make their own smoothies. We have a bag of frozen bananas in the freezer. We always buy extra bananas when we go to the store so that we'll have some left over, and we freeze them on purpose when they get ripe. And then, they know we have a like kids safe can opener, and they know that the rules for making a smoothie are to put in a can of the full fat coconut milk that we have and some pieces of frozen banana, and then they just like throw in other stuff, and they're so excited to like throw in other stuff and give it a try. So if your kids are hungry when they come home from school, another thing that you might want to do that we do is coconut milk smoothies. My kids also really love after school hard-boiled eggs. It's one of those things where they can just like grab it out of the fridge and run outside and play, and they'll get some good, you know, filling nutrients from that. So, okay, I think we beat that one.
My stomach is starting to growl now from all of that talk. I'm really hungry now.
Yeah, you're on the West Coast. For us, we're like ready for bed.
Yeah, it's dinner time for me. So I'm like, man, I could go for all of these things.
Well, Leslie, do you, maybe you could, other than the questions that we've answered today, what would be maybe three things that you could share with people as kind of big takeaways for getting children, teenagers kind of on board and thinking about this in a healthy, positive way, and how can parents kind of do that?
Well, I think beyond nutrition and even fitness, so much of it just boils down to being happy and like loving yourself. I really try to focus on that in the book as well, because not just kids, but even adults, everyone just really needs to learn to appreciate who they are. And I think that when you really love and adore yourself, then it's so easy to want to eat healthy and want to work out. And, I just really want to encourage people to find that self-love. So that's a huge takeaway from the book.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's not just you too. It's also loving everyone around you and just having open communication, because a lot of times, and especially teenagers, they completely close themselves off. They feel like they're going through these crazy things that no one can relate to, and everything is just so hard. And if they were to just open up to friends or even family, they would realize everyone's going through this and you don't have to suffer silently. Like, this is a common thing. So loving yourself, loving each other, and just having that open communication are so key. And everyone will make it through their teenage years if they really try to focus on those things. So that's one thing.
That's an awesome one thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, you know, I love the paleo lifestyle and everything that it's brought into my life, but at my core, like, that's what I'm all about, is just spreading the love. I'm a total hippie.
I think we all are. Goes back to that vegetarian roots.
Right?
I'll claim hippiness in spite of never being a vegetarian.
Yeah, you don't have to be vegetarian, but that's definitely a part of it, of my story at least. But yeah, that's the biggest thing I would say. And knowing why you want to eat a certain way is also key. I mean, it can't just be your parents are telling you to do this. Like we've touched on earlier, it has to be the kid's choice, because a kid, what is a kid? It's just a little adult. Like, we're all human. Like, no one's going to tell me how I need to eat or how I should live my life. And of course, you know, you want your parents to be there to help guide you, because they have experience. They've been there themselves, but it has to be the kid's choice. And, you know, you shouldn't scare them into it, but you can help them understand what's happening in their body, and they will see the difference. They will see that, oh, I feel a lot better when I eat this way. Or, you know, if they're teenagers, like, oh, hey, look, my skin cleared up. Or, hey, I don't have any cramps this month. Like, for my period, I'm like healed. Like, that's powerful stuff. When a kid can realize those things on their own, then they have their own reason for wanting to take on this type of lifestyle, and not just because they've been told that they should. So that's really important to me too.
Awesome. Leslie, do you just want to remind people where they can find you?
Sure. The easiest place to find me is my website, which is leslieklinke.com. That's LeslieKlenke. And from there, you can connect with me. You can email me. You can find all of my social media. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And your book?
And my book, of course, is Paleo Girl. There are links on my website to buy the book. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and primalblueprint.com.
Cool. Well, yeah. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Paleo View and helping us tackle a topic that sometimes Sarah and I avoid things that we're not exactly sure of and experts in ourselves. So,
and having neither one of us have had teenagers yet, so it's kind of a whole thing.
Yeah, it can be tricky. That's for sure.
I have been a teenager.
It was not fun.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been very happy about paleo.
I don't think I would have been happy about anything.
Yeah. I was happy about sleeping. I got that part of the lifestyle down really well.
I killed it at sleeping.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And to everybody else, we'll be back next week.
Yeah. Good night. Thanks everybody. For having me, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that she's 63.
Me?
She's our ages combined.
Yes. That's how old I am.
In Canadian years.
Yeah. Nice.
It's hard above the north.